Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table,
a new United Methodist community of faith located in Sacramento, California.
We hope our podcast will help those who listen to grow in faith.
The podcasts currently feature the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu,
with a musical introduction by Anthony Coleman, our director of music.
We hope you find them inspiring.
If not now, tell me when. If not now, tell me when. We may never see this moment or place and time again. If not now, if not now, tell me when. I see sorrow and trouble in this land. I see sorrow and trouble in this land. Although there will be struggle, make the change we can. If not now, if not now, tell me when. Tell me when. We may never see this moment or place and time again. If not now, if not now, tell me when. If not now, if not now, tell me when. If not now, if not now, tell me when.
Our scripture passage this morning comes from letter of Paul, second letter in the Corinthian, to the Corinthian people. I'm going to read from the 8th chapter, first 15 verses, and encourage you to follow along. We want you to know, brothers and sisters, about the grace of God that has been granted to the churches of Macedonia, for during a severe ordeal of affliction, their abundant joy and their extreme poverty have overflowed in a wealth of generosity on their part. For, as I can testify, they voluntarily gave according to their means, and even beyond their means, begging us earnestly for the privilege of sharing in this ministry to the saints. And this, not merely as we expected, they gave themselves first to the Lord and, by the will of God, to us, so that we might urge Titus that, as he had already made a beginning, so he should also complete this generous undertaking among you. Titus was doing pastoral work there. Now, as you excel in everything, in faith, in speech, in knowledge, in utmost eagerness, and in our love for you, so we want you to excel also in this generous undertaking. I do not say this as a command, but I'm testing the genuineness of your love against the earnestness of others. For you know the generous act of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, so that by his poverty you might become rich. And in this matter, I'm giving my advice, it is appropriate for you who began last year, not only to do something, but even to desire to do something. Now finish doing it, so that your eagerness may be matched by completing it according to your means. For if the eagerness is there, the gift is acceptable according to what one has, not according to what one does not have. I do not mean that there should be relief for others and pressure on you, but it is a question of a fair balance between your present abundance and their need, so that their abundance may be for your need, in order that there may be a fair balance. As it is written, the one who had much did not have too much. The one who had little did not have too little.
You see right here in Sermon 50, John Wesley, who was the founder of what became the Methodist movement, we sang a song by his brother just moments ago in worship. Song 50 was titled The Use of Money. And There's another sermon that Wesley gave called The Causes of the Inefficacy of Christianity. And here at the table at Central, this is only the third time, and it's the third time in a row, that we've talked about faith and finances. And we took a whole year to get to this place, and I've confessed how unbiblical that actually is. It's actually not Methodist either. Wesley talked about finances all the time. He was actually organizing a lot of poor folks to transform the world. And then he was helping the folks around him that had wealth redistribute it. See, Wesley had this question, and it lived deeply in his own heart. He was concerned about whether Christianity could actually carry on. See, it seemed to him that there was a logical way that Christianity would just collapse on itself. And this is what it looks like. If you're a true Christian, I'm just going to use his words. Does it not seem, and yet this cannot be, he said, that Christianity, true scriptural Christianity, has a tendency in process of time to undermine and destroy itself. For wherever true Christianity spreads, it may cause diligence and frugality, which in course of time naturally begets riches. Okay? And then from those riches, we naturally beget pride, love of the world, every temper that is destructive of Christianity. So within Christianity is this tendency to turn itself upside down and to destroy itself, because as we become more faithful, we start to save more, to become more frugal. And then when we do that, we start to get rich. And that's not faithful, because we turn against it. So he says, is there no way then to prevent this? To continue Christianity among people, allowing diligence and frugality, they must produce riches. Is there no means then to hinder those riches from destroying the religion of those that possess them? And I can see only one possible way, he says. Do you gain all that you can and save all that you can? Then you must, in the nature of things, grow rich. Then if you have any desire to escape the damnation of hell, give all you can. Otherwise, I can have no more hope of your salvation than for that of Judas Iscariot. We don't talk that way these days, but Wesley kind of said it blunt. He just said it how he saw it. Churches don't often, at least churches like ours, don't often say things like that in the pulpit. We tend to like nuance. It's hard to nuance that. See, Wesley kind of hit us over the head, and that happens sometimes. Gain all you can, save all you can, that you might give all you can. For faith is at stake in our finances. Jesus needed only a single line to say it. One cannot serve both God and mammon. Cannot serve God and wealth. And this theme runs throughout Scripture with prophetic tendency and deep nuance. Walter Brueggemann, who is one of our leading biblical scholars of this time, he writes about this in this way. He says that the Bible calls us to a liturgy of abundance and helps us to see the myth of scarcity. We all know this. The Bible begins this way. It begins with abundance. We say it in our communion liturgy. God created, and it was good, and it was good, and it was very good. Be fruitful and multiply. And then later in Genesis, God blesses Abraham and Sarah and their families and sends them on their way that they might be a blessing as well. Our children are going to hear this story next week, and when the story ends, this is what our children are going to hear. Isaac and Rebekah had children, and their children had children. And their children had children. And then over thousands and thousands of years, that continued until your grandmothers had children. And then your mothers had children. Now you are a part of that great family, which has become as many as the stars in the sky, as many as the grains of sand in the desert. That's a story of deep abundance. That's how our story begins. And yet, by the end of Genesis 47, Pharaoh has taken over all the land except for the temples. See, he wants to hold the temples for the religious leaders to bless both him and those temples and the rest of the land that he's taken over. And with that, the notion of scarcity comes into biblical faith. And then Exodus untangles those two. We go back and forth. We say it again in the communion liturgy. Do you remember it? It's God created and it was good, but it wasn't good for very long. We say that because our story calls us to know its deep truth. See, when the children of Israel were out in the wilderness, something miraculous happened to them. They had escaped the Pharaoh that held all of that land. They're out in the wilderness, and each day they start to receive bread, a miracle from the skies. First time it happens, they look around and they say, "What is it?" That phrase, "What is it?" is manna. It's the Hebrew word for "what is it?" We've come to call that manna, and it's taken on a whole understanding of feeding us, but it literally means, "What is it?" That's what the folks were asking when it started to come down. But then three things started to happen. One, the manna started to come to them every day, and everyone had enough. But because they had learned, when they were enslaved, they had learned this notion of scarcity, they started to hoard that bread. They started to hold more and more for themselves. They tried to bank it, to invest it, and it turned sour and it rotted because you cannot store up God's generosity. It just keeps coming. We don't hold it. And that story is at the heart of what Paul is saying to the people in this story that Linda read today from 2 Corinthians. See, 2 Corinthians moves with Paul understanding, inviting us all to understand how riches are to be understood through the lens of Jesus. Through Jesus, Paul invites us to see that Jesus was rich, yet for our sakes became poor, and that by his poverty, we might become rich. See, we say that it takes money to make money, but Paul says that it takes poverty to produce abundance. Jesus gave himself to enrich others, and we're called to do the same. And so when Paul says near the end, he's looking back to Exodus 16, to that whole notion of manna, and he says, "And the one who had much did not have too much, and the one who had little did not have too little." So Paul invites his whole community to see the world like the Israelites did in Exodus 16. Brueggemann says it this way: "Sharing our abundance may, as Jesus says, be impossible for mortals, but nothing is impossible for God. None of us knows what risks God's Spirit may empower us to take. Our faith, ministry, and hope at the turn of the millennium are that the Creator will empower us to trust God's generosity so that bread may abound." Trusting in God's generosity is really hard. It's really, really hard for me. And I trust that it's really, really hard for all of us. Earlier this week, and I want to share it now, I didn't have it anywhere, but I want to, Steve Garness Holmes, who's a pastor, he says that faith is not what you think, but how you trust. And it actually takes practice. See, this myth of scarcity, it confines us, it controls us, and God keeps calling us back to see the abundance that's all around us, to see that nothing is impossible. And I don't think that that means we just turn away and we're irresponsible with our finances and we just say, "Well, there is abundance, let's carry on." That's not where we're called. That's not a faithful way of moving forward. So I want to invite us to take a moment. We're going to be more specific than we ever have been about our finances. I want to share with you a couple of things about our community's finances, and we're going to do it through visuals. I love numbers. My colleague in ministry, Linda, does not love numbers. So sometimes visuals are much more effective at communicating where we are. So I want to invite us to just look at this for a moment. This is our income through August. In most churches, you basically have one or two colors of this pie chart. You just have giving, and maybe you have building usage. Those are really the only two ways communities of faith sustain their ministries. We're in a unique place because 2 years ago, the United Methodist Church said, we trust the abundant vision that God has laid on your hearts, and we want to help you support and sustain and build something new in this place. And so the United Methodist Church started to give us funding over 4 years. And you see, this year so far, that makes up about 45% of the money that's come into the table. And so I want us to look as well at next year. This is where we're projecting going. This is our projected income for 2012. And our deepest hope is that our collective giving to the table is going to increase by about $3,000 a month. That's an abundant hope. We'll see where that goes and how it unfolds. But as we do that, what will happen is the United Methodist grant will start to pull back. And as it becomes a smaller and smaller amount of our overall budget, our giving will become a larger amount. And that'll happen again the following year and again the following, and soon we'll be taking off. I've been using this image of kids going off out the house, and I was sharing it with the Lindgrens who are back. Mark's brother passed away over the weekend, and they're at home in Nebraska. I was sharing it with Mark, and I realized, though it wasn't, it's not that you're sending your kids off to college, as they just did. This is more like, at some point, 2 years down the road, the church is going to send us off like we're done with college. And it's not going to be like a 21st century you're done and you move back in with your parents. It's going to be like a real move out, go get them. Good luck, force be with you, whatever words they might use. That's where we're going to be together in that space, reducing the amount of the grant, increasing the amount of giving, and who knows what will happen as more and more creative things start to happen around this place, how it'll be continued to be used by community groups. We have a lot of different groups that meet here, recovery groups, a group of teenagers and kids that are artists, and so all of these ways that our building is used. I also want to share with you how we spend the money that comes in. So these are our expenses, and you see that our expenses are a couple thousand dollars more so far to date of August anyways than our income has been. But this is where our money goes, and it's pretty simple, again, kind of like our income. You see that the bulk of what comes in goes to support the salaries and health insurance for Linda's family, for my family. You see as well that over a third of what comes in actually supports the day-to-day operations of this building, turning on the lights, fixing some windows, all of those things, over a third. You see that our music team makes up about 11% of what comes in. And you see that a really small portion, 4%, goes to a part-time custodial person who comes in to help clean and keep things moving, and to our budgets for ministry and for outreach. We expect our expenses to look really similar in 2012. They're not going to change a whole lot, but we have a dream about where we're going from there. So I want to share some of that with you as well. In 2021, so in about 10 years from now, this is what we imagine. We imagine that our giving has more than doubled, and that the giving that comes in that goes to pastoral salaries has become smaller. The giving that goes to our music team has increased. We've started to hire on folks to work and to help us in technologies and to be more creative in the way that we use this facility. And then what I'm most excited about is, instead of receiving that grant from the United Methodist Church, we're paying the United Methodist Church back so that it can be involved in ministries around the world. We call that apportionments here. But we don't want to be like most churches that just pay those apportionments. We want to be a church that pays those in full and then gives beyond in this community and around the world. We want to do that in two ways, both by serving ministries that are moments of prophetic witness of God that serve people's needs in this area, but also that promote justice and wholeness and well-being. And we want to start new communities. This is just our beginning. And we'll use those funds to do just that. See, we've grown tenfold in this last year together. And we believe that we're putting in place the infrastructure to continue that growing into the future, that God's vision might actually come to fruition in abundance in this place and beyond. And this is a first. It's the first time that we've talked about it in this way in worship. It's the first time where many of you met this week in kitchen tables and talked about faith and finances around a small table with folks. That can be a little bit uncomfortable, right? You're not supposed to talk about church and religion with family. You're not really supposed to talk about those things in public places either, especially around finances. And we're ending a week where we've all, many of us anyways, have spent time around kitchen tables doing just that. So you see a vision of God's abundance growing us into the future right here before you. And we here at the table have a process for growing in faith. It isn't actually revolutionary, but I believe that it's rooted in the deep history of our church. It's a method that calls on the abundance liturgy that Brueggemann reminded us of. See, we invite you to learn more about it by taking Blueprint for Discipleship, by taking a 5 or 6 week class to learn some of the language of faith so that you can begin to share more consistently how God is alive in your life during the week. So many churches have become places that people go to. And faith is a thing that you do once a week on Sunday mornings. We believe our kitchen tables give us a method for helping folks integrate their faith and their daily lives. So we hope that you'll move through Blueprint. And then from that place, we hope that you'll move into kitchen tables. They're at the heart of what we're trying to do here at the table. We have 10 of them gathering now throughout the week. Some meet before worship and after worship today and on most every other day of the week. And it looks like this. Folks gather together around a table. They share how it is with their soul, how they're doing harm, doing good, and loving God. And in that process, we learn to notice how God is alive in our life. See, faith is not what you think, but how you trust, and it actually takes practice. And that's what kitchen tables give us, is practice. And we all know that everything worth doing takes commitment and practice. So I want to take us now into just thinking about where our series is going. Several of you will be moving with us to experience baptism for the very first time. We have already 4 folks that are going to be baptized on October 16th. There might be more among us who are hoping to be baptized, children and adults. We'll celebrate that together on October 16th. And then on October 23rd, we're going to make our giving commitments to one another and to God about how we will share of our resources. We'll ask that question, how in the next year will we root our lives in grace, grow in faith, and reach in love? See, Paul drew upon the image of manna from Exodus in writing to the folks in Corinth. And we heard that story this morning. See, I think he wanted to paint a picture for the people of how trusting in God, in God's abundance, can transform us. And so we want to share a story like that with you all this morning. You might call it a modern parable. Linda found this earlier this week, and it's the history of Central United Methodist Church. And so I want to tell you a story. The kingdom of God is something like this. 6 months before California claimed its own statehood, a few lay people and a Methodist pastor gathered in a rented out hall in downtown Sacramento. Lewis Brook, William McGrew, Sister A.M. Wynn, Dr. J.S. Curtis, he was a class leader, Caroline Alexander, she would be the only one that would make it for the first 50 years of that congregation. See, they dreamed of rooting their lives in grace, of growing in faith, of reaching in love. And they started to gather in class meetings. They built a sanctuary. And that church, it started to be called Asbury Chapel. That was its name. 7th Street, between J and K, it was 34 by 60 feet. It was scarcely a shell of a building. There was no plaster, no paper on the walls, but it served the needs of those visionary leaders who trusted in God's abundant grace. but the myth of scarcity started to seep in. See, by 1852, just 2 years later, the payments for that new chapel started to rise so much that they received a final notice for foreclosure. For foreclosure within just 2 years. So Mr. Stovall, he wasn't in that original group from what we can tell. He advanced the church $1,600. That wasn't enough, so then he went to five friends, and he personally borrowed $950 from five other friends, and then gave that to Asbury Chapel. And it was good. But we know it wasn't good for long. See, on November 2nd, right after they paid that mortgage, November 2nd, 1852, a terrific fire swept Sacramento, burning most of the city and all of the churches in downtown, including Asbury Chapel. All was ashes. But in 1853, folks gathered amidst those very ashes, and they continued to trust somehow in God's abundance, that God would make a way amidst no way. And by 1859, 6 years later, they dedicated a sanctuary for worshipers totaling 400. They also decided that they were going to change their name. No longer Asbury Chapel, now their First Methodist Church South, Sacramento. It's a long name. In November 1868, so all those years later, Pastor Sim organized for them the very first giving campaign. So I don't know how they did it up until that point. Maybe they just trusted that someone would keep borrowing money from their friends and passing it along to the church. But they finally said, you know what, we need a method for this. And they created one. I want to read it to you. First, let a book be prepared containing names of all those willing to contribute to the church's support. We're going to write it down, people. Second, let a collector be appointed to be paid. Third, let that collector and one of the stewards set down opposite the names the amount they are willing to pay per month. And fourth, let the collector wait upon all who have subscribed once a month. You know, though, by 1922, they had to stop giving their money to this one church because it became another church. First Methodist Church South had become Central Methodist Church. We have a history of changing names in this place, people. We need to claim that. See, it called itself Central because it was centrally located in downtown Sacramento. But by 1922, downtown had transitioned. It was no longer a place where all the families were living. It had become the edge of the industrial part of the city. And so they started to panic. The myth of scarcity started to seep back in because the people were not around them. And so there was a pastor, and the pastor's name was E.E. Hall. And it says that he borrowed a Ford. I love this. You cannot make this up. He borrowed a Ford, people, and he drove around to the east of the city and to the northeast because that's where the people were. And he started to see that God's grace and love needed to be shared with the folks who were out here. So what are we going to do? And those folks started to gather in their sanctuary, and they said, you know what? We're going to sell all we have here, and we're going to move out there where the people are. That was an abundant vision that came upon them. They were trusting in God's grace, and yet the Great Depression followed. And that dream got placed on hold. And by 1946, so 20 years they held on to that dream. By 1946, that old Victorian church was just that. It was an old Victorian church. And they came back and they sold it. And they bought land in East Sacramento at 51st and H, and then just moments later they bought land again at 53rd and H, and they started to build a sanctuary. And folks worshiped in this place for the very first time in October of 1964, and these were the words that they heard from this pulpit. We build an altar here and pray that thou, God, wilt show thy face. Dear Lord, if thou wilt come to stay, this house we consecrate today will be a holy place. place. Around 45 years later, a small group of folks would gather in this place around a table to dream about God's abundant joy in this day. Linda Ramirez and Mark and Eric, Harrison, Kelly, Joan and Julie, Greg and Sarah and Laura, Stephanie, Carissa, Wes, Ashley, Gary, Kim, Clayton, Sherman. They began to grow together in faith by watching over one another in love. They wrestled with what it meant to do good, to do no harm, to stay in love with God. To be sure, the myth of scarcity was real, and it was all around them, yet the liturgy of abundance prevailed. See, God's grace can't be held back. A few months later, a small group of folks from the historic community, should we call them Asbury Chapel, or First, or Central, they gathered together and they voted unanimously to worship with the table, that these two might become one. And while the name didn't formally shift, we started to try out some new language. Maybe they did that too back in the 1800s. God's story of abundance overtook that myth of scarcity once more, and the folks who gathered in that room would not be the ones to close the doors of this place for the last time, at least not now. And just like worship began back in October of 1964, we gathered for the very first time in worship together in October of last year, exactly 1 year ago today. We're growing in number and in depth. To this day, this community continues to do just that, to watch over one another in love. They gather together before worship and after worship, on Mondays at Table on Tap, and soon on Tuesdays at Sac State and at Pangea, at a coffee house on Wednesdays, in homes and at Old Soul on Thursdays. See, churches like this, though, they're not supposed to grow, especially not in California, especially not today. Yet last week, folks gathered around kitchen tables, and they shared about their faith and their finances. They did that in homes and in the church, in coffee houses around this town. See, some folks might say they're just gathering as friends do. And others might say, no, that's the evolution of church. That's God's abundant story being rewritten this day. Sharing our abundance may, as Jesus says, be impossible for mortals, but nothing is impossible for God. None of us knows what risks God's Spirit may empower us to take. Our faith, our ministry, our hope are that the Creator will empower us to trust God's generosity so that bread may abound now and always. Amen.
You gotta move. You gotta move. You gotta move. When the Lord gets ready, it gets ready for you. You gotta move. Oh, yeah. You gotta move. You may be high, or you may be low. You may be rich, or you may be poor, but when the Lord gets ready for you, you gotta move, oh yeah, you gotta move.